Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sports Kingdom, or in fact, welcome to Debate Wednesday. This evening, I have here my co-hosts, Sean and Max. Welcome, guys.
How are you?
Hello.
Yeah, we got an interesting show today. The number to the show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, it's 646-716-5733 if you want to talk about anything special that's going on throughout this week, and of course chime in on the debate here. Also, the chat room is open. Follow us on Twitter at SKBT Radio. Follow us on Pinterest also. The easiest way to find us on Facebook is by going to our Blog Talk Radio page, clicking on the link, then liking us on Facebook. Email the show for questions, inquiries, advertising, or anything else. And one last thing, but just posted up the poll question. It asks all of you if you thought the Lakers picked the right coach. So go to that poll and answer it. So we got a good show here, so let's get started. So Mike D'Antoni, days after Mike Brown was relieved of his duties, in a startling move, the Los Angeles Lakers went with the 2005 Coach of the Year, Mike D'Antoni. Many people, including players, were stunned with this outcome, and mostly thought the coach with 11 rings, Phil Jackson would appear to be the next head coach of the L.A. Lakers. So I got to first off ask you, Sean, did you think the Lakers picked the right coach?
Do I think they picked the right coach? I'm going to have to say, I think no, but they went with what they did, so...
Yeah, you know, it was very stunning, I thought. There's just been so many stunning headlines throughout the NBA this season. And I got to say, one of them was totally this, you know, especially after Mike Brown was relieved of his duties. And then a few days after, it appeared Mike D'Antoni was the next head coach. And it wasn't Phil Jackson. You know, Phil Jackson... He said it, but the principal reason why he wanted to return was because of the L.A. Lakers fans. So, what an opportunity squandered there. But, yeah, I got to ask you, Max, as well, though. Did you think the Lakers picked the right coach?
I don't know. They definitely didn't pick the right coach, but I don't think that means D'Antoni can't work in Los Angeles. He'll obviously have to make some edits to his system. Now, one of the primary functions of his up-tempo offense is that he actually places the power forward and shooting guard in either corner. Now, I don't believe that Pau Gasol is meant to be standing in the corner. I think that or one of the primary functions needs to be taken out. The Pau Gasol, we all seem to forget what the number one complaint was after last season. It was not about the point guard. It was not about three-point shooting. It was not about Andrew Bynum. The number one complaint from the Lakers brass was that they were not using Pau Gasol close enough to the basket. Now you go ahead and you get the one coach who's going to take them the furthest away from the basket. To me, you are losing arguably the greatest strength you have. Dwight Howard is an incredible player. Kobe Bryant is an incredible player. But there is no one who can do more on that team than Pau Gasol. He can put up 20 points. He can grab 10 rebounds, and he could even dish out 10 assists from the post. You need to take advantage of that. And when you start sticking him in the corner, we saw what happened with the Knicks. We also saw that since D'Antoni left, when Melo and Stoudemire in this lineup together, they're 8-1. When they're in the lineup with Mike D'Antoni, they only won 22 games out of 52. So I think you know what the issue is. The issue is you have a coach who doesn't fit the personnel. Now, D'Antoni is a great basketball mind. If he can adjust his system to the personnel he has, the Lakers can thrive. The Lakers can compete for a title. But if he is going to step in and be stubborn and try to use the same system he had in Phoenix and New York, the results are not going to be as he hopes.
Yeah, you know, D'Antoni, of course, is an offensive-oriented coach. You know, and yeah, you know, you're right. The problem is that, you know, you really can't have Pau Gasol hanging. You know, he's a really valuable player to your team, and you should, you know, on nights, you know, make sure that he gets action as well. So, you know, I totally agree with you, but Sean, you have anything to add about Mike D'Antoni? Sean, you there?
Yeah. I was what I expected when I woke up Monday morning to find out that Mike D'Antoni was fired. I mean, they thought they went with the best fit for their team. I don't necessarily agree. So, but they're saying the Lakers are excited to play under D'Antoni, so I'm waiting to see. Of course, he hasn't coached a game yet, so we won't know how his system will work until he starts coaching and gets maybe 5 or 10 games in. But he wasn't my first choice. My first choice, as everybody knows, was Phil Jackson. And if you look at D'Antoni defensively, he has it ranked higher than 22nd in all his years coaching. His defense teams defensively have it ranked higher than 22nd. So what does that tell you?
Well, I got to ask you guys, but how do you think of Mike D'Antoni now coming back and joining forces with Steve Nash? I mean, remember, but they used to interact with one another back in Phoenix. And so, you know, my question to you guys is, how do you think it's going to all work out in L.A. now?
I think that Nash and D'Antoni, it's a match made in heaven. It's going to work out well. There's no doubt about that. But it goes beyond Steve Nash. You know, people have this misconception that, oh, well, you know, when Nash and D'Antoni were together, the reason they lost was because they didn't have the talent to get by San Antonio and Kobe and the Lakers. That's not true at all. Keep in mind, it wasn't just Nash and Stoudemire. It was Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion, Joe Johnson. That's one of the greatest core fours of that generation. The issue was they didn't have the defense. Now, you look at the Lakers, what's the difference between that Suns team and this Lakers team? Clearly, there's better defensive players than Kobe, Dwight Howard, and Metta World Peace. But the real difference is you're talking about players who are in their prime, athletically speaking. Right now, the Lakers, you're talking about Pau Gasol, Metta World Peace, Kobe Bryant, and Steve Nash all over the age of 30. And these players, you know, they'll function by virtue of the fact that they have the talent. And they will win games. They will compete for the title. I'm not going to say they're going to win it, but they will compete. But at the end of the day, this is a lot of wear and tear on an old team. And unless D'Antoni is willing to embrace players like Darius Morris and Jordan Hill, you're going to be looking at a lot of games in which the Lakers aren't looking too good because they're flat out tired.
Yeah. You know, if you look up and down that roster, I mean, they're not too bad. I mean, they got Antoine Jameson, Jody Meeks, who can knock it down with those threes when it comes to the pick and pop. You know, you have Darius Morris. He put on a decent performance the other night. So, you know, irregardless of that, you know, I got to take 1 second and say, you know, how about a Bickerstaff, you know, just filling in for a couple days as the interim coach. I mean, nothing much about him, you know. He handled the Lakers quite well throughout his very short time as the Lakers interim coach. So, getting back to Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni, I think they're going to do pretty well, to say. Steve Nash is going to be familiar with what is going to happen here. He's going to dictate this this plan they have now in L.A., so, they're just going to have to execute it all out on the court. So, one last question, though, but before we move on, but I got to ask you guys, did you think the Lakers handled this situation with Phil Jackson in a correct manner? I'll start with you, Sean.
I have to say no. I felt they kind of disrespected Phil Jackson a little bit. They agreed to meet with him on Monday, and according to what Celtics have said, they shook hands and agreed to let Jackson take a couple of last days to make sure his head and get his mind ready for the grind of the season, and they basically said, bump you, and, they went and did their own thing, but, Jackson's got to take it in stride, but I will say Jackson, I do believe, is going to coach. Now the teams around the league know that he has the itch to coach, he's going to coach somewhere. I can guarantee you that.
I mean, I don't know that they handled it wrongly, but I think the telling tale of all of this is I think every single person in America went to sleep that night assuming that Phil Jackson would be named head coach. And by every single person in America, I'm also including Phil Jackson in that statement. And at the end of the day, I think the Buss family's grudge against Phil Jackson, it's childish, and that's the only way to describe it. I don't think D'Antoni himself said he was shocked, and I think to me, there's no way around how much better of a fit Phil Jackson is for a team than any coach in NBA history. There's no reason to place anyone else in that position besides Phil Jackson. So when you decide that you're going to name a coach other than him, at least have the decency to tell him. At least have the decency to inform him before he hears it on the radio. I mean, this sounds like Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. And that's a whole nother topic. But the only reason the Cowboys are not winning Super Bowls is because Jerry Jones has an ego. And that's what it appears to be with Jerry Buss and the Los Angeles Lakers. So if they end up not winning the title, it goes right up to the top, and you can thank him for that.
Yeah, and don't forget, but I really thought Mitch Kupchak, their GM of the Los Angeles Lakers, I really thought He didn't really handle this in a correct manner. I thought, Phil Jackson with 11 rings, I mean, he welcomes you into his home, and then he tells you, straight to Phil that they would have him make his final decision on that Monday. And it appeared that they called him in the middle of the night, and, it left a bad taste in pretty much everyone's mouth, including Phil Jackson's agent. It's just not a good way, to treat Phil Jackson with his great legacy he has. I just really thought they could have worked this out better, but now they have Mike D'Antoni, and we just got to wait and see what happens moving forward with the Lakers, as they've been absolutely been getting total nonstop media. I don't know how long it's going to continue with the big drama with Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, you name it. It's just the media just keeps on continuing to talk about the Lakers, and it seems like everyone is actually quiet on the Miami Heat this year, but they're doing great, of course, as always. So but moving on now, the NHL lockout. Since September 15th, 2012, the NHL has been on lockdown. The National Hockey League Player Association has failed to work out an agreement and resume play. A multitude of players are playing overseas, and Commissioner Gary Bettman still has us wondering when fans will get to see hockey action again. So, starting off with you, Sean, do you see this NHL lockout to prolong for a well majority of this season?
I can see the lockout going on for quite a long time. It's going to be quite a while before we see hockey. As of course, as you know, the most recent move was to cancel the Winter Classic. So I think it's going to be quite a while before we see hockey. We could lose next season. Who knows?
Yeah, it just feels like it's been a while, but really, though, it's been only 2 months. It's only been 2 months, and, a lot of fans are just...
It's only been 2 months, but look how much hockey we've lost. We've already gotten moving to January. January's portion of the schedule with the canceling of the Winter Classic most recently. So what does that tell you? Pretty soon, I think you just got to scrap this whole season, really.
Yeah, it's just
That's exactly what's going to happen. They're going to scrap this season, and you want to know what the number one reason they're going to scrap it for is? Because they're scared lifeless. If you're talking about the owners, of course they're scared, because these players are suddenly learning, Ovechkin, Chara, that they can make more money overseas. It's not just about they can be home in the countries they come from or something like that. They're making more money. And because of that fact, who's to say that players like Crosby won't join Ovechkin? If you suddenly have your two most marketable figures, I mean, what happens if guys like Stamkos start following them and suddenly the most marketable people in the entire NHL are going overseas? What's to say that kids aren't going to start growing up and saying, we want to play overseas like my favorite player? And that's what you really have to think about. This isn't just a lockout for a season. I think people really need to start fearing what's going to happen with the NHL as a league. And I'm not going to say that they're going to go under, but if this doesn't get fixed fast, we might be seeing what could be the end of the NHL.
Yeah, wow. You know, money has been a major factor plugged into all this debacle lately. It's just a total shame, especially for fans who just want to see some hockey action again. But, you know, I got to ask you guys, though, do you miss hockey? I got to ask you, Max, because I don't really know much from you, but who's your hockey team, and do you really miss watching hockey as a fan?
I mean, I don't necessarily have a team, but I mean, I've been watching hockey all my life. I've been playing hockey all my life, and it's a shame that we don't have the NHL. But, you know, this is years in the making. As, you know, as leagues like the NBA start gaining all this exposure on a global basis, the NHL is steadily losing power. And if you really want to get down to it, people have these debates over and over again about who's the best player in the NHL, and then it goes to who's the most important player in the NHL. That conversation is over, because with Sidney Crosby sidelined for virtually two seasons, they had horrendous ratings. People just lost interest in the NHL. And to me, even if Crosby was there, how strong do you believe your league to be when the absence of one player has such a severe impact? And it's sad to see. I mean, if LeBron James went down, you still have guys like Kobe and Carmelo. I mean, you have limitless players in the NBA. If a guy like Mike Trout hadn't come up in the MLB, people would still be watching. Meanwhile, in the NHL, a guy like Stamkos breaks out and has an incredible season, and most people outside of the NHL realm don't even know who he is. And to me, that all goes on to the owners. And, you know, it's the owner's job to say, you know, even if we're going to lose money, we have to risk it to try and promote the NHL more, to try and get it onto major television networks on a nightly basis like the NBA. I mean, you never see NHL on ESPN. You know, you don't see that on a nightly basis. Meanwhile, every single MLB, NBA, and NFL game is on national television. And to me, that's what it all comes down to. If you're not willing to spend the money to get the exposure, you're in danger of losing this league. And it's sad because the NHL is one of the most exciting leagues in the entire world. But how could we expect anything less to happen? If you're not making money, you're not doing anything.
Yeah, you know, it just seems as if it's just all, it's just declining. It's just basically declining, and, you know, it's just a very sad thing to see, you know, from a personal hockey fan. So, but Sean, any last words before we move on?
I'll say that the lockout is, I hope it ends soon, but I'm counting on this season, based on the last 5 years, is season this crap.
Yeah, so moving on now. By the way, I just want to let our listeners know that you can call in to talk with us. We are here for the next 20 minutes, so if you would like to join the debate, then call in by dialing 646-716-5733. And also our chat room is open, so feel free to just talk as you wish. So anyways, moving on now. Josh Hamilton, 5-time All-Star, has not yet to sign a deal with a team in Major League Baseball. Josh reportedly has been asking for 7 years, along with $175 million. Starting off with you, Max. Where do you think Josh Hamilton should end up? And at 31 years of age, do you think 7 years is too much to ask for?
I think 7 years is too much to ask for, regardless of how old he is, strictly based off of the fact that how many off-the-field issues can this guy have? I mean, I know it was quiet and kept under wraps last season, but how can we forget about the fact that this guy was on chewing tobacco for the entire season and then let go of it in the middle of the year? Now I'm all for getting off of it. I have no problem with that. But Nolan Ryan was outspoken about this because clearly the physical effects of letting go of tobacco will harm you, and you will go through withdrawal. And everyone was wondering, why did he suddenly go from smacking out four homers a night to barely hitting the ball? And that was the reason why. And I think that every team in Major League Baseball is going beyond the years and the money right now, and they're saying, can we afford to take a risk on this guy? You know, in terms of talent, Josh Hamilton may be the best player in the major leagues. I mean, he won the MVP award last year for a reason. Or 2 years ago, excuse me. But, you know, there's just too much risk. And, you know, when we do talk about age, think about a guy like Albert Pujols, who got that monster contract last year from Los Angeles. Suddenly he comes in there, and he wasn't even performing up to standards until, what, halfway, three-quarters of the way through the season? Clearly it was too late when he did start performing because the Angels didn't make the playoffs. So when you have a guy who's already 30, you have the history with a Pujols and an Alex Rodriguez where these long contracts end up shooting you in the foot. There's clear reason why he's not getting a seven-year deal. And quite frankly, I don't think even the bottom feeder of the league would give him 7 years. He's an outstanding player for at least three or four more years. He's going to be elite. And, you know, maybe he will be elite for seven more years. But with all that said, it's not worth the risk. You have too much history going against you with him personally and too much history going against you with stars like Pujols and A-Rod not performing at the standards.
Well, it's inevitable that Josh is arguably one of the very good players in Major League Baseball. But you know what? You make some very good points there, Max. You know, it's just It all comes down to, you know, how Josh can perform in the upcoming years ahead. And plus, you know, you don't know how he's going to do. He's going to do as far as his personal life goes. You know, he's been struggling. He's been fluctuating between good and bad, and, you know, he's been on that good track right now, but, I mean, you just never know down the line what can happen on that track. But, yeah, you know, Sean, let me ask you, though, do you think 7 years is too much, and plus, do you have any idea of where you think Josh Hamilton should feasibly go? Sean? You there? Yeah, we lost our co-host, Sean. I extremely apologize for that. But, yeah, anyways, though, let's talk about where we think Josh Hamilton should end up. So, Max, let me ask you, do you have any ideas of where you think is the best possible option for Josh Hamilton to end up?
I mean, clearly, you're going to need some deep pockets to sign him, so I don't think a team that's light in the pocketbook will be able to get him. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if a team like Miami goes after him. I know that they just let go of a lot of high-profile players that they gave these major contracts to. But, you know, Hamilton isn't a Jose Reyes. He's not a guy who, throughout his career, has had his effort questioned. He's a consistent performer, and I think that Miami would be foolish not to explore the possibility of having Josh Hamilton and Giancarlo Stanton in the same outfield. With that being said, I don't think he's leaving Texas. You know, Texas has made it as far as they have based off of the fact that they can hit the ball. And with all due respect to their pitching staff, they're really not that good in the rotation. And they fooled us in the regular season into thinking that they are, but, I mean, all these guys who end up with 15 wins have ERAs above 4. So if you're going to take away arguably your best hitter, you might as well take away your biggest strength. So it might take some negotiating, but I think he'll end up back in Texas.
Yeah, you know what? I can totally agree there. You know, I just don't really see Josh Hamilton going anywhere else but Texas. You know, it just seems that this free agency so far, just there hasn't been any hype to Josh Hamilton going elsewhere. You know, many teams haven't they seem adverse to taking the risk on Josh Hamilton. And so, you know, yeah, you know, I feel that it's just very likely that we see Josh Hamilton back in a Rangers uniform next year. You know, there's nothing else much to say, you know, except if, you know, there is a team that surprisingly comes out and takes Josh Hamilton for 7 years worth $175 million of his own desire. So, there's just so many impending questions right now, but, you know, we'll, of course, see down the line. So, yeah, but, you know, Max, I don't know about you, but is there anything you would like to talk about today? Anything else that you would just love to talk about today on Debate Wednesday?
You touched on it earlier when you spoke about how the Lakers are garnering all this attention and the Miami Heat really aren't. And I think that more needs to be made of that. I mean, the Heat would love if there weren't, but more should be made of that because you're basically giving the Heat, who, although impressive in record, they haven't really looked that good themselves this season. You know, if you look at the game most recently against Atlanta, Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade combined for 34 first-half points. They combined for, I believe, 5 points in the second half. LeBron James in the first half only scored 6. In the second half, he scores 32. So what you're really seeing with Miami right now is they're going through the same type of growing pains as the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, they've played together for 2 years. Through that time, they've rarely ever been healthy at the same time. And even when they're playing together, they're playing hurt and not really maximizing the talent they have. Furthermore, if you're actually watching these games, LeBron James hasn't been facilitating as much, and Mario Chalmers has actually stepped up as more of a traditional point guard. Now, you look at it, they have the addition of Ray Allen, they have the addition of Rashard Lewis, and clearly this team is going to rely more heavily on the approach that they took during the NBA Finals, which is turn to your three-point shooters. We can talk about LeBron all we want. Without the three-point shooting of that team last year, they wouldn't have even made it to the NBA Finals. And I think with the attention that's going to Los Angeles, all we're doing is setting up the Heat to take home a second consecutive title. They don't have the pressure of the media. They don't have the fan attention they had last year. And as they're struggling, they don't have to go backstage and answer 200 reporters' questions. They don't have to go on social media and see people doubting their abilities. You know, they got out-rebounded against Denver by a significant margin. No one made a deal of it because they won the game. Meanwhile, L.A. plays one of the best teams in the entire league to a two-point loss, and people are acting as if they're a lost cause. You can't make enough about how important it is to stay out of the media's eye. I mean, you have so many teams. Look at the Memphis Grizzlies from 2 years ago coming in as an 8 seed and upsetting the media-driven San Antonio Spurs. You know, there's just so many examples in the past, and I think that right now all we're doing by giving Los Angeles attention is enabling Miami to develop as a team without any negative attention at all.
Yeah, not too many people are really acknowledging that. You know, I just really think, like you said, they're really comfortable. They're really comfortable in their own skin. this year, and, you know, it's feeling like it's possibly going to be a second straight time, but you just never know what's going to happen, you know. I mean, if you look back at the playoffs last year, I mean, a lot of teams worked their butts off to make an impact and hopefully advance on. And, you know, it takes some obstacles, I think, when it comes time to the postseason indeed. But, you know, in the meantime, though, I mean, there's always some kind of early point of view in mind that eventually the best team out there, which is the Miami Heat, will go on to win the championship. And possibly maybe, I've been saying this all along, but I really think we could be seeing a repeat from last year between Oklahoma City and the Lakers. But, you know, James Harden is a little questioned since he's out of the picture now. But, you know, still, though, you know, I see those two teams very, very competitive. And, you know, there's also a lot of other competitive teams out in the West, if you look at it. I mean, the Clippers, I know, have been doing all right so far throughout the beginning of this season. Also the Memphis Grizzlies. And the Dallas Mavericks, you know, I really thought they were going to struggle without Chris Kaman for a couple games, including Dirk Nowitzki being out for quite a while. But they seem like they're doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is a team to watch. I don't know that they're a title contender, but they're definitely a team to watch. I think that Oklahoma City is looking great, as you said, but we always do. Every year we overlook the San Antonio Spurs. And I think what's most significant about the Spurs this season is look how much depth that team has. And we saw the beginning of it last season when they started rearing off. I think they won 40 out of their last 50 games with Tony Parker in the lineup. And what a lot of people don't talk about is at the trade deadline, they made two significant moves when they brought in a new center in Boris Diaw and a new, I don't know if you would call him a sixth man because of Ginobili, but a reserve in Steven Jackson, two key players. Now, they had to adjust on the go, and we saw when they played the Oklahoma City Thunder that they weren't exactly there yet in terms of team chemistry. One year later, you have one of the greatest coaches in NBA history and Greg Popovich being able to mold this roster in whatever way he wants, and suddenly you have a team that is not only on the same page in terms of team chemistry, but there's no limit to the depth this team has at every single position. I mean, one of the guys who I think is going to start breaking out, not as a star, but as a quality reserve, is Thiago Splitter. Splitter really impressed me during the Olympics. His fundamentals are down. Everyone talks about, oh, he's a terrible free throw shooter. His free throw percentage went up nearly 15% from 2011 to 2012. The guy's only 27. You know, he's working next to Tim Duncan, who's the best guy possible to give you lessons on fundamentals. And, I mean, if you look at every single position, there's someone there, if not more than one person there, to back them up. I mean, at center, you have Boris Diaw, Thiago Splitter, and DeJuan Blair. Power forward, you have Tim Duncan and a sharpshooter who's performed in the clutch numerous times, and Matt Bonner. You have Kawhi Leonard and Steven Jackson at small forward. You have Danny Green with the game winner last night and had an all-around phenomenal game. People are only talking about that one shot, but he was incredible all the way through and has been really since last season. And you have Manu Ginobili behind him. You have Tony Parker at point guard, and you have Gary Neal and Patrick Mills behind him. There's no limit to the quality players on this team, and you have three proven winners, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. You're talking about three-time NBA champions and a four-time NBA champion in Tim Duncan. So to me, I still think San Antonio is the team to beat in the West. And really, until their big three retires, I don't see it going any other way. They finished the past two regular seasons with the best record in the NBA. They've finished the past two seasons flirting with postseason success. Obviously, Memphis knocked them off in the first round 2 years ago, but they made it to the Western Conference Finals. And until the series shifted to Oklahoma City, it really looked like they were going to get away with a victory over the Thunder, too. So as long as they can remain healthy, that's obviously a huge question, specifically with Manu Ginobili. I'm not sure anyone can beat the San Antonio Spurs if they're firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? I mean, it's the same out of the Spurs every year. It's just the same. All because, you know, Greg Popovich gets overlooked, and he assembles a very good team each year and out, surrounding players that have been there year by year, such as Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker. And Tony Parker's another guy who gets overlooked because, you know, he is just a phenomenal point guard. And don't forget, but he was close. He was up there in the MVP talks last year. So, you know, Tony Parker indeed is, of course, a great player at his position. There's many point guards that we can discuss, but, you know, one of them that are really, really good is arguably Tony Parker. And, you know, they also have Kawhi Leonard, like you mentioned. Kawhi Leonard, he's great. You know, he's going to turn out great for their future, of course, with, you know, even though you say, you know, the depth is tremendously handled, you know, although you got, you know, you got to look at the age factor, though. You know, the age might get, you know, come into place sometime, and, you know, that's when, you know, you fire on all cylinders with Kawhi Leonard and plus Danny Green, who's been in the NBA for a while. I think he was with North Carolina, right? Yeah. So, like, yeah, North Carolina, and, you know, Danny Green does a great job spacing out the floor for them, and he can hit buckets too some nights, and, you know, he's just a great player as well. You know, the Spurs come out each year and out with a perfect record, and, you know, who knows, maybe one of these, I mean, this year we could once again see a great year out of the Spurs. So, but yeah, is there anything else, you know, real quick on the East, you know, I'm a big Sixers fan. You know, I actually would like to hear from you, Max, on what you think about the Sixers, and plus what you think about the Knicks on their good start so far this year.
I mean, the Sixers, their success is so hard to gauge right now. Obviously, they're 4-3, but, you know, one of their wins was a 77-62, ugly, ugly slugfest against New Orleans. But at the same time, they also held the Denver Nuggets to only 75 points. And then on the flip side, they got blown out against the Knicks twice. So, obviously, it's only been 7 games. There's no reason to overreact either way, but I think that this team is showing that they're still growing. And the guy who's really impressed me more than anyone else in the NBA is Drew Holiday. So far, he's averaging 19-9, and that's a huge jump from a year ago when, I mean, forget about the scoring numbers. We know the guy can shoot from three. But my question for him was always, is he actually a point guard? He seemed more like an undersized shooting guard to me. He's not great with the ball in his hands, but I wasn't sure he could facilitate. And he's really putting an end to all those concerns this season. And another guy that's really been impressive is Evan Turner. And this is the second year in a row that he's been impressing me. You know, averaging almost 9 rebounds a game from the small forward position. The big question is, if or when Andrew Bynum returns, will they start from scratch in terms of team chemistry? Because it's not going to be the way it is now. You know, right now with a guy like Spencer Hawes or a guy like Kwame Brown, you're not looking inside to start your offense. You're starting with the perimeter. What Doug Collins hopes to do with Andrew Bynum is start from the inside and work their way out. And it'll be interesting to see how that team is able to do so once Bynum's in the lineup. And it'll also be interesting just to see, can Andrew Bynum actually carry a team to a championship? More, I mean, even further more than a championship, can he at least carry the Sixers to the playoffs?